Hello everyone, my name is Babak, and I'm a computer science undergrad student at the University of Edinburgh. And I wanted to talk to you about this project that I did last year and this summer, which focused on interaction models for social media in teaching and learning situations.
So this work is part of an ongoing project at Edinburgh University. We've been looking at the ways which basically social media can be used to facilitate learning through different kinds of academic and student interactions, and in order to support a specific pedagogical aim. And we especially are interested in the types of interactions that academics are trying to apply to their courses, and specifically how they might locate and employ a tool in their teaching in order to support a specific pedagogical aim. What we're basically trying to do is make the process of tool selection for academic a bit easier for teaching and learning situations. And in this slide I want to give a more clear description of what the problem is about. So one of the challenges that academics are faced at the moment is finding an appropriate tool for their course to teach. So the question is, how do academics find tools for their courses? What most academics do is most of the time they use the tools that they're already familiar with. For example, maybe a tool that have been used in that course for the past 7 years, for example, or maybe a course recommended by one of their colleagues, or the tool that was used by the previous professor, for example. And what some academics do is search for appropriate tools, but this is not an easy task because there are so many tools out there, and specifying requirements for a tool is not as easy as searching for one specific tool itself. What most of the academics attempt when they're searching for new tools is that they apply the tool in their course, so they use it, and they wait to see if the tools meet their requirements. But so my idea is to reverse this process, which I will talk about in a later slide. This is not an efficient and easy way because, well, it's quite time consuming. Like, you have to use a tool, try it, and at the end of the year or end of the semester, you have to see, well, did it work or did it not work? And solving this problem can really help academics for finding appropriate tools for tool selection. One of the PhD students at Edinburgh University 2 years ago, she interviewed 12 teaching staff across all disciplines, and the main questions that were asked in the interviews was, so what tools do academics use, why do they use it, and does it work for them or not, and what do they like about a particular tool that they're using, and what are the pedagogical aims that they're using it for. And we found little evidence, really, in these interviews that academic people trying to have an interaction in their mind and then choosing a tool rather than the other way around. So as I said,
this is the idea that I was thinking about. So instead of selecting a tool and use it in the course, and then at the end of the year or end of the semester, see if the tool worked, we make a kind of a language, so a model, that we can specify requirements, and then by specifying requirements, we match it with an appropriate tool by some application or some matching models. And
So that's the idea. Academics locating tools by specifying their interaction that meets their requirements.
And yeah, but this idea is not so easy to implement, and there are three main reasons for it. The first reason, how do you specify requirements? Like, for example, Second Life, you can, or Google Hangout. You can Google this, and pretty much, I mean, the first thing that pops out is the description of how the tool works. But how would you describe a requirement for a tool? So you can say that, yeah, I'm looking for a tool that supports these kinds of interaction, has these properties, and I want to use it for this pedagogical aim. Google will return zero results, pretty much, I think. And even if you manage to specify requirements, so even if you find a suitable language and that you can specify requirements in, how you match it with an interaction model? So this is kind of like a design decision. And yeah, again, there's so many different ways to do this, so, and which one of them is right, who knows? And even after this step, you still have to evaluate the models to see if they actually work or not. And it's quite time hard and time consuming because you have to ask a collection of academics to try this model, so use the tool that matched with their interaction model rather than the tool that they have been using so far. And then after some time, you have to interview them again and ask them, how was it? Did it work or not? Oh, and now I want to talk about the interaction models. So
as I said, first thing that we need is a way of specifying interactions. We decided to use a process calculus for the interaction models. And if you don't know what it is, don't worry about it. I'll explain a bit more. It's basically a language that allows us to classify interactions and compare them to each other and basically define them in a very simple way. There are so many of it. The language that we decided to use for many reasons, but I don't have time to explain all of it. It's called CCS, Calculus of Communicating Systems, which was introduced by Robin Miller around 1980. Its syntax is quite fairly simple. It has basically two factors in it. One of them is called process, and one of them is called communication or action. I'll explain a bit more of it. A process is a black box that basically has inputs and outputs, and the communication factor are those inputs and outputs. I'll maybe this example can help you understand a bit more. So here, P prime and P are processes, and A is an action. So what happens is P accepts the action A, and it will evolve to process P prime. And remember that, yeah, P prime can potentially be different from P. For example, it might not accept A anymore. Maybe with a real example, I mean, with a real life example, things will become more clear a bit. So, for example, let's say an email exchange. A student asking a tutor a question and a tutor answering him. So here, student and tutors are processes, and the question and answer are actions. So, overbar means output, and if there's not an overbar, it means it's an input. So, student outputs the answer, receives the outputs the question, receives the answer, and then goes back to being a student. And a tutor, same idea. Oh, and I also wanted to talk about the ARC labels. There's so many factors involved in an interaction, and we cannot involve all of them. It's kind of a trade-off between the complication of the model and the total size of the different number of possible models that we can have. So we have to choose appropriate factors to include in the models. And first factor that I decided to include was the message content, so a way of represent of what the communication is about. So it can be about information, so what the basically course material, what the, a lecturer is teaching to the students. Or it can be a question and answer type of situations. Oh, and second factor is anonymity. So if students can see what, like who's communicating to whom, that is represented by the meta factor. And meta symbol also represent pretty much every other possible content that we are not representing here. So for example, people obviously, I think everybody has used Google Doc and Wiki as well. So in Google Doc, when let's say a group of students are working on an article, for example, they're editing an article, and when somebody puts a comment, it's like nobody knows who said that comment, but on the Wiki, you can pretty much see who edited and who commented, and yeah, it's not anonymous, it's identified. So yeah, that's that. And here are just some quotes from the interviews, and it basically just for the justification that why I chose these factors to include in the model. Here's another example. So for example, an online video. It's pretty simple. Again, a tutor just lecturing the students. Students know who is the lecturer, so that's why the M is there. And information just represent the course material. Pretty simple. The tutor outputs his identity, the course material, and goes back to being a tutor. Students, they receive the identity of the lecturer, the course material, and they go back to being a student. A more complicated example, maybe, is this one. So, group assignments. The tutor here releases the assignments, and basically students would discuss with each other. And then at the end of the semester, they have to submit their answer to that assignment. So the tutor output his identity, output the assignment. At the end of the semester or the year, he gets the answers from the students and obviously goes back to being a tutor. Students, they receive the assignment. Then, here, the plus sign is represents the basically choice. So, for example, a student can talk to the other students, can also hear what the other student has to say, and this is the no process. So he can do neither. I'm usually this type. Like when I'm in group assignments, I don't talk to my roommates. They pull me down. So. And at the end of the year, they have to submit an answer, and then they go back to being a student. So these are the models, and each of the models can be matched to a tool. That's basically the idea. And about the ARC labels I wanted to talk about. So we can go deeper we can be more accurate in the ARC labels. So for example, question. When a student asks a lecturer the question, it means that, well, he wants to know the answer. But when a lecturer is asking a question, it probably is for the assessment, and same goes for the answer. And which of these should we choose for the ARC labels? How accurate should our models be? And this is a thing that I was talking earlier. There's a trade-off between the complication of the models and the total size of all different possible models. So if we include all the factors in the model, everything that we could possibly model in an interaction, for example, the number of people in the interaction, the time of the interaction, everything, then we're going to end up with so many models, and at the end of the whole process, every model will be exactly matched to one tool, and so many models will not even be matched to anything. And on the other hand, if our model is too simple, then one model can represent so many tools, and our models will be useless, basically. So there's a trade-off here, and which of these arc labels should we choose? Which level in each hierarchy diagram should we choose? Who knows? This haven't been tested yet, so.
And there is still so many unanswered questions, so many issues that we haven't been solved. And first thing, as I mentioned earlier, we are ignoring a lot of factors. For example, time of an interaction. So in an email, when I'm emailing my supervisor, I might get an answer on the same day, a week later, or a month later, for some lazy supervisors. Google Hangout, interaction in Google Hangout is synchronous, but in discussion forums, usually it's like somebody comes, posts something, and a day later somebody else comes, and also the persistency of the message, as someone was talking earlier, Snapchat, like your message content disappears, but if you're communicating with email, your message content is always there. You can always look it up. These are the factors that the models are ignoring at the moment for the reason that I mentioned earlier, the trade-off. And it is also difficult to evaluate. We haven't done that yet. It requires asking a group of teaching staff to try this, not use the tool that they're using, and use the tool that are matched with their desired interaction. And it might not even work, so it's difficult. Last thing that I want to say is that in the summer I made so many models. I tried to basically model the famous tools first, the tools that most of the academics people are using. And more work needs to be done on this, for example, the equivalency definition. So when two models are the same, when are they equal? More work can be done on this. For example, we can interview teaching staff by asking them to compare pairs of models and interaction models and ask them whether they find it equal or not, and then evaluate our model. And at the end of the project, we would like to have basically an application with an input of an interaction model and the output as a list of the tools that can support that type of interaction. And the most important thing that I want to say that even if this idea does not work, I believe thinking about interaction models for people who are teaching, it's a really useful thing. Like academics, they usually don't think about interaction models. They think about the tools, at least when they're selecting it. But in reality, when you're teaching, this is what they're doing all the time. And thinking about interactions, it's a really useful thing. And I would like to encourage academics to do this more, even if they don't use it for tool selection. Thank you so much for your time, and any questions?